Paul Nolte, Senior Wealth Advisor and Market Strategist at Murphy and Silvest. Hey, Paul, welcome back. How have you been?
We've been hanging in there, enjoying the last bit of warm weather here in Chicago before we get into the serious part of fall.
Yeah, no kidding. It's I've kind of loved the smell and feel and look of it. I wish it was just a little drier, but it's been a nice little last hurrah. Talk to me about bonds. You say they are the Rodney Dangerfield of the investment world. Why do you say that?
They're not getting any respect and haven't for years. And a lot of it was because, remember Tina, the girl from the bond land, there is no alternative. So you didn't invest in bonds because there was no yield. So there was no alternative to equities. That's why you had to buy the equities, because you weren't getting anything in bonds. Today, you're getting 5.5% in treasury bonds, and investors don't want it. So they're still looking at the equity markets. They're still looking at tech names. They're really not looking at the bond market. Now that you can get a pretty good rate of return that we haven't seen in 15 to 20 years available to you in the safety of U.S. Treasuries.
I thought people were buying them. They are not? Or are you talking about institutional investors?
Well, institutional, but certainly, there's a fear out there that interest rates are going to continue to go up. So yeah. I'm not going to buy bonds because I'm going to lose my value, other than maybe a short-term bond. But I'm not going to buy a two-year or a five-year bond because if interest rates go up, the value of my bond goes down. However, if you wait that two-year period or you wait that five-year period, you get your money back, plus you get your coupon, you get your interest payment every 6 months. So there is a nervousness among investors to really move out a little bit and buy a bond that may mature 3 to 5 years from now and have much in the very short end.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting because I understand that thought process when it's 2%. But considering how good and safe 5% sounds right now, people are holding out that maybe it'll be 6 and they'll be sorry they got it at 5?
Yes, because now it'll drop. And that's part of the reason why when you construct a bond portfolio, you really want to have maturities coming up on a regular basis, every year, every 6 months, whatever the case may be, so that as that bond comes due, then you can go out and buy a five-year, an eight-year bond and take whatever the prevailing rate is. If interest rates are higher, you're buying a higher coupon bond. If interest rates are lower, you're buying a lower coupon, but you've locked in those yields on those other bonds that you now have out 3, 4, or 5 years. So you want to kind of stagger your maturities, but we're seeing a lot of investors buying very, very short-term maturities because they say, I can get 5.25 short, and 2 years it's less than 5. Why would I do that?
What's your advice to these people?
Is you really want to start to extend. We are probably toward the end of the rate hiking cycle. We might see another quarter, maybe another half, after coming up 4.5% to 5% over the last year and a half. Most all the heavy lifting has been done. There may be a little bit more. We may still be here a year from now, maybe a year and a half from now. But I think what that means is the chance of significant loss is greatly reduced by entering into the bond market today versus where we were, a year, 2 years ago.
Are those people worried that inflation will erode the value of that bond?
Yes, absolutely. Inflation today, though, is less than that rate on the bond. And the second part of that assumes that you're going to get that rate of return in the stock market. And that's not necessarily a guarantee, certainly not the same guarantee that you're getting from a treasury.
So when you're looking at
Exactly. When you're looking at the stock market, you're looking at a market that's selling at about 20 times earnings. And that historically has been on the high side. So the risks, if the economy doesn't do as well, is that the equity markets may not do as well also.
Paul, somebody just texted in and they said, hey, why is a bond better than a CD? You were talking about bonds paying 5%, and that is actually not good enough or maybe good enough for some people. How would you distinguish putting money in a bond versus a CD right now?
They're both very similar. The CD will not have price fluctuation like a bond does. It doesn't get priced every day. But if you certainly pull out of that bond before maturity, you're not going to get all the earnings that you would otherwise get. There are penalties. Usually you will get paid more on a treasury than you will on a CD. And you will usually get paid more in a corporate bond than you will on a treasury. And the reason for that is there's a risk that the corporation may go bankrupt, not like the federal government. So in the hierarchy of things, the riskier the bond, the higher the rate of return. And generally speaking, the treasuries are going to pay you a little bit more because they're not taking those monies in and then turning out and loaning those dollars out, much like banks will, to make that spread. So that's part of the reason why we look more to treasuries than we do CDs.
We're talking to Paul Nolte. He's a senior wealth advisor and market strategist at Murphy and Silvest. For those who just joined us, just give me the elevator speech. What were you saying about bonds a moment ago? Why is it that people are hesitant, even at 5%, to put money in them?
They're just afraid that there's going to be an erosion. You know, the interest rates are going to continue to rise and the value of that bond is going to decline over time. And we've seen it certainly in the last couple of years where the returns on bonds have been minus 15% for the last year and a half. That's equity-like losses that you normally don't see in a bond market. That has a lot of investors concerned and staying at the very short end of the yield curve.
Right, but is the only problem with that, if it goes up to 6%, you lose value, but you're going to get 5%. Nothing is going to change the fact that a 5% bond is going to yield 5% on your money, right?
Correct. Correct. But in the interim, before that bond matures, you could lose, you know, when you open that statement next month, go, holy cow, I'm losing money here. What's going on?
So then what about stocks? You said that just before the break, it sounded like you weren't so interested in equities, but it seems to me as flat as the market's been, isn't that a buy signal right now?
Maybe. When you look at the top stocks, the biggest stocks, the big seven, if you will, they've accounted for really most all the rate of return in the S&P 500. If you look at the average stock has lost money not only this year, but also last year.
Well, I think that's my point, Paul. But I think that's my point. Go ahead, finish that thought. But the fact that the market is up, but based on just a handful of stocks, makes me wonder if there isn't some value out there.
There is, but you again, they're still declining. They're still in valuations that are historically high. And they were historically high because the comparative was bonds, and they were getting essentially zero. Now we're getting 5%. So you want to see the equity to account for that. You want to see the equity markets generally decline. I'm not sure that it's been far enough yet, and we haven't yet accounted for the potential for a recession somewhere in the future.
So if I'm dollar cost averaging right now, where am I putting my money? People are afraid of bonds and you don't like stocks. You got a mattress for me, Paul? What's on your mind?
I do, and it's in my house. So just go feel free to step it up. I think bonds do make sense. I'm arguing that you should be buying bonds. You should have a bigger portion of your portfolio in bonds than you otherwise would. Because I think the equity markets are going to struggle for a while yet. At some point, there will be a crisis in the financial markets. We always see that when interest rates go up. At that point, it will probably make sense then to roll into the equity markets a little more aggressively. So it's not an all or nothing decision. But if you are comfortable with half your money in bonds, half your money in stocks, I would say maybe 40% in stocks and maybe 60% in bonds. You'll have a much smoother ride, and you won't have to hit the Alka-Seltzer as much.
Yeah, that's a 40-60 mix. I think traditionally folks have thought 60-40, so you've got those flipped, don't you?
Yes.
But fair enough. I think that's very interesting. But if interest rates have topped out, maybe they're going to go up a little bit more, but that eventually they're going to come down, what will that do to stocks?
So I'll answer your question with a question. Why would interest rates decline? Probably because the economy is not doing well. And if the economy is not doing well, that means the equities are not going to be earning as much. Companies won't be earning as much. And that means then the valuation of those companies is going to be somewhat less. We saw it in 2000. We see it going into the recession in 2008. The Fed was cutting rates in both of those instances, yet the equity markets continued to go down because we were entering into a recessionary period, and equities do poorly in those recessions. But now that you have bonds that are doing well in that recession, you now have the opportunity to start go shopping in a cheaper equity market.
So do you think we're going to have a recession next year?
I've been on that bandwagon for far too long. Some people would say I'm wrong, not just early.
When do you get to be wrong? I mean, if you've been saying recession for 2 years, in my lifetime, yes. But I mean, when's it going to happen, Paul?
Yeah, I would say that we're due. I've been seeing it for a while, and I still think that we're seeing some cracks in the consumer, but not a lot. The manufacturing side certainly has been. The service side, it continues to do well. So when you're talking about travel and airlines and hotels and restaurants, that's doing great. Consumer is doing fine. Manufacturing is a different story. Housing is a different story. So it's kind of depends on where you're at in the economy and in the market.
Are you surprised by the willingness of people to continue to spend?
You know, if you listen to the CEOs of the banks, they all say, you know, the average deposits are higher than they were pre-pandemic. So if I've got the money in my account and coming, you know, we're still a year and a half maybe outside of the pandemic, people are like, yep, I need to get out. This was, you know, I don't know what's going to happen next. This is a scary world. I'm going to start to travel. I'm going to do those things that I've been putting off. So they're doing it.
One explanation we saw here, I think we talked about it maybe last week, is baby boomers, people who are 60 and 70 and 80 and have been smart with their money all these years, or have had the opportunity to see it grow all these years, they're spending it. But a lot of the spending that we're seeing isn't being done by 25 or 30-year-olds. It's being done by their parents, who aren't going to leave them anything when they die someday. They're going to have some fun now.
Absolutely. And that's where most of the money is. I mean, you know, you go back early in both of our careers, we weren't making a ton of money. And, you know, the extra money that we had was going to buy food and housing, et cetera. And as you do get into retirement, closer to retirement, you are making a much better dollar. You have those resources to spend. And hopefully the kids are out of the house and you can afford those trips and do those things. And that's a normal progression. You know, we saw it, I certainly saw it with my parents. So it's normal to see that. And yes, that is the biggest cohort right now. And that is where a lot of that spending is coming from.
Paul Nolte, Senior Wealth Advisor and Market Strategist at Murphy and Silvest. Okay. Always nice to talk to you, Paul. Thanks for your thoughts today.
We'll talk to you soon.
Just recently, the Institute for Justice Clinic on Entrepreneurship had their 10th annual Southside Pitch Competition, and they declared the winner of this business pitch competition R City Kitchen. That's the letter R, and then City Kitchen. And the winner of not just one prize, but three, is on a phone line right now. Here's Rodney Trussell, the founder of R City. Rodney, you're on WGN. Congratulations.
Well, thank you guys so much for having me on.
So what is R City Kitchen? What do you do that won all the awards?
Well, we're a unique kitchen, I should say, on South Side of Chicago. In fact, we only dedicated a shared space out there.
Shared space kitchen. That is, you live on the South Side, do you, Rodney?
Yes.
And my understanding is you, knowing that neighborhood, knew there was not a shared space where entrepreneurs or other people who want to cook for a living, they don't have a space to do that. There are those throughout the city and suburbs. Nothing on the South Side, that's what you're doing, right?
Yeah, so there's nothing dedicated. You know, there are some, you would say, some restaurants that will allow you to use their space while they're, you know, closed for the day or slow for the day. And so, but we are the only dedicated shared kitchen on the South Side of Chicago.
So what does that look like? What does that mean? I would imagine refrigerators, cooking stations, stoves.
So we have it all. So we have from refrigerators to walk-in freezers, shelving for rent as well, Also, we have equipment as in ovens, and mixers, and stoves, griddles, the whole nine yards.
How do you make money on that then? Do you charge rent or lease?
Yeah, so we rent the space to the members by the hour. Also, we charge a monthly hourly rate as well. And also, the members pay a yearly tuition as far as the membership.
Who's using it? What kind of businesses are in your kitchen?
Oh, they're abroad, you know, from bakers to pastry chefs to rib guys as well, doing prep and things like that. Also, we have caterers, and, you know, the range is broad. You know, we also do sea moss as well as missing juices and things like that, seasonings. I mean, I can go on and on.
Huh. So is it amateurs, that is, people who aren't doing it commercially but for their own purposes and they just want to use a good big kitchen, or are these all entrepreneurs?
Yeah, they're all entrepreneurs. So we got guys that are seasoned and some that are just starting.
So how many clients do you have?
Currently right now, 31, and a new one's coming tomorrow. So 32.
I can see, though, the value of that. And I could see how that then would really enable some of these other businesses to get off the ground. It's not just your business. You really are a sort of seed for a lot of others, aren't you?
Exactly. So I'm a launching pad for the South Side, you know, for that early stage entrepreneur to get inside, to bake, to prep, to cook, to, you know, things of that nature. And this will be a launching pad for the community.
Is it always being used? Like if I walked in there right now, who would be in there? What would be going on?
Right now, we have a baker there currently right now just sifting powder flour and sugar.
Oh. You are there right now. I want to hang out there because when you said ribs and guys prepping stuff, that sounds, I'll bet the aromas in your business are pretty good.
I'll go ahead and say, yeah, just the smell alone, you know, driving. What's going on here? Just the smell alone gives you a hunger.
Talk to me about the night you won the award and when you found out. What was that like?
Well, it was like a dream come true. In fact, I think I'm still dreaming right now. I was just thinking maybe win one award, perhaps, you know. My hopes weren't too high, but, you know, but when I won the first one, and they said, so the second one came, and the third, I was blown away.
A total of about $13,000 then on these various categories. But you were already...
No. $15,000 up.
Pardon me, 15.
Yes.
And
yes.
But your business already up and I don't want to take any of your money away, trust me.
Sure enough.
Your business already up and running. So would you make it without this, or what do you do with this money that you weren't already doing?
Well, actually, I'm going to plow the money right back into the kitchen space with training. So those ones that are not quite ready to rock and roll, you know, have programming going on, like as far as food costing, you know, meal prep, things like that. So apply back into the kitchen as far as for training for the individuals that needs it.
Do you find that some people, they got a good rib recipe or a good cheesecake, but they don't know how to bring it to scale, to market?
Exactly. So we're going to have, again, programming there as far as packaging, you know, labeling, things like that. And so, but that's going right back into the kitchen, right back.
Now, did I see you're a Chicago State grad? Is that right?
Yes, I am. Shy State in the house.
And when did you graduate?
In the year 2000, actually. So about eons ago, it seems like.
Yeah, no kidding. And then how is business after the pandemic on the South Side for you and for these entrepreneurs? Is there money to be made? Are there customers?
Yeah, so the pandemic really stemmed and really birthed a lot of food entrepreneurs on the South Side, you know. And for me, you know, I have two businesses. I also do a consulting company for food and beverage. So for us, it's kind of slowed down for the first 3 or 4 months of the pandemic. But, you know, being in the community of African Americans, they start making meals from the house to sell to the public. So it pretty much never stopped.
Yeah, it would seem to me like if people are hustling a little more, all the more maybe reason for them to need a big kitchen like yours.
Yes, and that's the purpose. So I want to grow that hustling mentality to a CEO mentality, to having your own business.
That's interesting, isn't it? I mean, yeah, a side hustle is one thing, but if you want to get serious about it, you need to maybe do more than just cooking it out of the back. You want to, I wonder if these people then will graduate to their own brick and mortar locations, their own kitchens. Yep. Is that the ultimate goal?
That's the plan. That's the plan. So, you know, the guys that are not ready, you know, want them to get the EIN number, the business license, things like that, and structure the business properly to become, you know, brick and mortar ready.
That's good to meet you. Congratulations, Rodney.
Thank you, sir.
We've got more business news. Let's contact Dave Schwann.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. UAW members who work for Ford are voting on the tentative agreement reached this week. The strike affected over 4,000 workers at Chicago's Southside Ford plant. Ford says the company lost over $1 billion during the 41-day strike, losing $400 million a week. Ford CFO says the new deal will raise car prices by up to $900. There's a backlog of boats on the St. Lawrence Seaway due to a strike. About 360 workers with Canada's Unifor are on strike over wages with the St. Lawrence Seaway Management Corporation. The strike has bottled up ships in the Great Lakes, meaning boats moving into Chicago from the Seaway will have to wait. The Illinois Gaming Board has okayed a full operating license for Bally's Chicago Casino. It applies to Bally's temporary site at Medina Temple and to the permanent casino to be built along the Chicago River. That's your Wintrust Business Minute. I'm Dave Schwann.
Let's do the business of food now. Here's Steve Alexander.
Thank you and happy Friday. Well, actually, it's kind of a sad Friday, and Ray Charles is here to help out.
Sad, so sad.
What is so sad after I thank the Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com for sponsoring us today and every day? It's truck season. Put a Silverado in your toolbox.
It's a sad, sad situation.
Okay, maybe I'm overdoing it a bit, but it's a sad time of the year as we watch our gardens die off. All those fresh veggies and flowers are going to have to wait until spring. And it's the last time I'll be able to say it's a Mr. Fizz Friday, his last regular appearance of the year, telling us how to grow our food and gardens and lawns and trees and whatnot. What do you have for us today, Jim Fizzell?
Well, there are lots of things going on this week, Steve. Halloween, of course, and the first freeze is due this week. So it's time to finish up the garden. First thing you need to do is get rid of the leaves as they keep falling. You don't want them to smother the grass. And you need to keep mowing as long as the grass keeps growing. You need to fertilize if you have not done so this fall with a winterizer fertilizer. Before we get a freeze, you need to drain and roll up the hoses and store them where they're not going to freeze. Although you might need them later if we have a wide open winter, which is being predicted. We may need to water some plants, especially evergreens, in the middle of winter. Collect all of the chemicals, put them in a protected spot where they won't freeze. And you need to lock them in if you can, in case there are any kids that could get around and get into them. Certainly keep them in the original package with the label on it. Absolutely do not store chemicals in any container except the one they came in. After you've done your last mowing, it's a good time to winterize the mower. But you also need to check out the snowblower. And if you didn't service that last spring, maybe this is a good time to do it. Then you might decide to order some firewood for your fireplace. Still time to do that. There's a good supply of it this year. Then set up the bird feeders and buy some bird feed. Get out to a farm stand for the last time and get some apples, pumpkins. Then retire indoors. Make a pie out of those apples that you just bought.
Mr. Fizz, gardening guru Jim Fizzell. From the farm to your belly, today's National Breadstick Day and National American Beer Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the business of food on 720. WGN.
Speaking of businesses in Chicago, here's Ariella Gibson. She is the marketing and communications manager at the Chicago Loop Alliance. Ariella, it's John Williams. Welcome back.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. I know that you folks keep tabs on customers and pedestrians and tourists and business people in Chicago. What are some of the latest numbers?
Yeah, so we recently released our quarter three State of the Loop report. That's showing people are still coming back in a higher capacity, thankfully, for tourism and for office even. We're one of the top cities that has an office occupancy return within the U.S. city's average of over 50% weekly. So it's great news. It's continuing to trend positively, and we look forward to more people enjoying the city for all it has to offer, whatever season.
So is office occupancy is 50% national average. What is Chicago?
Chicago varies between 50 and 60% on a weekly basis, but anecdotally, we know that there are businesses and buildings that have even higher occupancies than that. And of course, the changing nature of office work itself being hybrid or one day a week, 2 days a week, it varies on how many people are actually downtown is different right. than what it used to be. But the work and the people experiencing the Loop and downtown in Chicago as a whole is still just as rich as it has been in the past.
I want to make sure I understand what 50 to 60% means, because you're not saying that 50 to 60% of the buildings have occupants at all,
no.
but that they have occupants who are there 50 to 60% of the time. It's
Correct.
Not that 40% of the buildings are being unused.
Correct. Correct. The occupancy, the physical occupancy of buildings in the Loop is much higher. It's within like the 90% range. I don't want to be explicit on the number because I'm not sure. But the physical amount of people coming back to the office is much greater than 50 to 60%. It's the amount of swipes or the amount of entries of, say, one right. worker into a building at a certain point of the day. So that, again, is within like an 80 to 90% occupancy on a weekly basis for businesses and buildings, but it's just varying on timing.
What about pedestrians? Do you have a number on that?
Yeah, so pedestrians, we've remained over 1 million pedestrian counts on along State Street in the Loop since midwinter of 2023. And during quarter three, so July through September, we were about 75% to 2019 levels. So that's major events like Sundays on State, Lollapalooza, NASCAR are driving tourism, pedestrian activity to businesses along State Street and to just peruse, you know, all the things that we have to offer. Mm-hmm. So that's an extreme difference and positive note.
I think that people, when they think about Lollapalooza and certainly NASCAR, which is new, it's a double-edged yeah. sword. It brings people downtown, but then does the hassle of putting that on discourage people from coming downtown? Would you say that it's a net positive for the city, those kinds of events?
I do. For NASCAR, for instance, that I know to some is a hassle or an inconvenience, but the love and the passion and the excitement that comes from people visiting for the first time or seeing something new in their city that's never happened before in any city in the U.S. is so unique that that wins out for the naysayers or the inconveniences for others.
What about Metra and CTA? What are the public transportation numbers?
Yeah, so Metra provided over 8 million rides in quarter two alone, and that's a 34% increase compared to the previous year in quarter. So again, great positive momentum that's continuing to show increase and show that people are coming back for work, for pleasure, for different unique experiences as well. And then CTA has had its highest amount of trips since the start of the pandemic in the quarter two, so a little bit before the quarter that we're reporting on, but that's over nearly 70 million rides within that one quarter compared to 2019 levels.
Both of them are below pre-pandemic levels. You said Metra is up 34% year over year for the summer, for January, for March, April, May.
Mm-hmm.
And the CTA, that's the real tough one. Your reporting is reported the highest amount of trips since the start of the pandemic in Q2 with over 68 million rides below. Do you know how far below we are 2019, though?
I do not know that number expressly for CTA. I know that nearly 70 million rides is probably even greater now within quarter three and quarter four because of the increase in more people coming back to the office within quarter three. So that number is likely to grow the next time we're reporting on things, but I don't know the exact number of how close we are to being within 2019.
One last number for you. What about hotel occupancy?
Yeah, so as many people know, hotels did a phenomenal job throughout the summer, especially in quarter three. It recorded 77% average occupancy rate in September alone, which is likely due to increased business travel, tourism for major events like Lollapalooza, Sundays on Stage, NASCAR. But that's also one of the highest, second best monthly revenues for hotels at nearly $265 million just in September. So great things to say.
I wonder if anybody was taking the time or has a way to break out the Taylor Swift effect. I wonder how much of the pedestrians, hotel occupancy, public transportation was caused by her, but clearly she was one of the driving forces this year.
Yeah, she was. And other major sold-out events like Beyonce or Ed Sheeran or major sold-out experiences at the Chicago Theater or Broadway Chicago runs, even though that was one of their slower seasons, those are contributing to a different atmosphere in the Loop in particular. And we do know that those are major drivers for pedestrian activity. Like during Lollapalooza, we saw pedestrian levels that were exceeding 2019 levels, the same for Sundays on Stage and for Ed Sheeran. Like those are unique times where people are experiencing more than the one event that they're going to, though, which is different than may have been before the pandemic. So
it seems like events are the way cities are going to reinvent themselves. Ariella Gibson is the marketing and communications manager for the Chicago Loop Alliance. Ariella, thanks for your time today.
Have a good day. Thank you.